You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we've already locked ourselves down, so we don't need to be oppressed. That's right, we self-oppress. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful romantic, and I retroactively and proactively denounce blah, 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 has ever said and will say on this show. Wow, I couldn't even say proactive this morning. Proactive, wasn't that also like, now I'm thinking about John Madden, tough acting, tin acting, but there was also a brand called Proactive or something as well. So I don't know where my brain is right now. This season, I mean, I know it's only the second episode, but so far, this season has felt the most different from all of the other seasons that came before. There always felt like there was some sort of connective tissue between all of them. Maybe it's because the break was extra long. Maybe because the season started right as Echo left us. But I don't know. It almost feels like we should do a full reboot. I'm not saying we will. I'm just interested in how other people think about it, how other people feel about it. Let's find out how my co-host feels about it. Joining me this trip from his corner office, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Another beautiful spring day here in Northern California. As far as a reboot, I say never stop rebooting, right? Like, always reinvent yourself. That being said, I feel it too, man. Like, there's something. Maybe, I mean, it's not the election year thing, because that's not really on people's minds quite yet. But there seems to be a lot of interesting things happening, and a little bit of a buzz about just random things. And I just don't know what that really adds up to yet. It's still early in the year.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it is. I think you have a really good point. Is we've been so woke farce focused, and as we said, we might be on the precipice or past the point of peak woke, and we're on the decline, and we don't know what things are becoming yet in our culture. Maybe that's it. Maybe we're at a transition point.
We're at a metamorphosis. Culture. Yeah. We're going through a metamorphosis, I think.
Yeah. Where are we going
to
be?
Can we go back to the 90s or 80s? Can we get out of the 70s finally? That's what I want to do. Can we get out of this malaise?
It's so weird. And maybe that's the thing too. It's like getting old at the same time, because can you imagine we actually want to go back to the 90s? Like when we were in the 90s, I don't know about you, but I wanted to get out of the 90s.
Exactly. I was like, I was so excited to get, like, I was like, I can't wait till the internet's everywhere. I can't wait, you know, till, you know, I can get out of in the world. And, I used to think I wanted to go to Silicon Valley, right? I was like, I can't wait to move west, and yeah, all this stuff.
Well, and that was going to be something I was going to say in one of the trailers. How about the stop making movies set in LA challenge? We don't only have to film in LA anymore. Stop doing that.
Jeez, that's not possible.
No, it's not possible. And apparently it's also not possible to let go of some of this woke stuff, as we're about to find out right now in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around, just like really. As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode, Locals is per month. I'd like to give a big thank you to everyone who is still supporting us on both of those platforms. It's amazing that in season 12, even though, you know, we're not in our peak years, I will say that. We had a couple years where we did really, really well through Patreon and Locals, but still, we have our loyal fans who still respond to our episodes, still listen, and still support us. And that is awesome. I'm going to keep doing this show as long as I feel like I have something to talk about. And I don't know. It's just, I don't feel the need to go around and talk about these things to all the random people I meet. And I think in today's day and age, everyone feels the need, because I was thinking about it the other day. Mm. We were raised on, because the reason I was thinking about it was there was this thing that came up on TV where it was like, it's the election year and get out and vote. And it's, well, what is it? Don't forget to vote. I don't know what it was. It was something like that. But I remember back on Nickelodeon when I was a kid, Linda Ellerby would cover the elections for us as children. And it made me realize that since our generation was kids, we've been told we have to have our opinions out there and we have to make our opinions known. And maybe that's what I'm doing with this podcast, but at the same time, I don't do that in my daily life. So yeah. I think I'll keep this show going as long as.
Well, and Justin, I haven't even told you yet, but there's a podcast app called Fountain, and I just fixed it all up to look good on Fountain, and we've gotten some listeners, no supporters yet on Fountain, but hey, if you use Fountain, we're now on Fountain, and you can support us there, and people can support us there as well.
What is the difference between Fountain and all the other podcast apps?
Bitcoin. That's the difference. You can support shows with Bitcoin, and you get a couple sats when you listen.
So are they new? A couple sats? What are those?
One millionth of a Bitcoin, I think.
So when you listen to our show, you get one millionth of a Bitcoin?
Sometimes, yes. That's how it works.
How is that decided? We don't have to pay them, do we?
No.
The app does?
Yeah, through advertising, yeah.
Now, are these followers new followers, or are they listeners who have been around, mid-siders who have been around for a while?
I don't know. I can't look at their identities. I just saw that there were 93 listens to the episode last week, and that's the first one I posted up on Fountain. So
that's awesome. It's unfortunate, though, that we can't know who they are, so we can't steal their identities.
Well, if they leave a comment then give us their social security number, then we can do that.
Leave a comment so we can use your social security number and steal your identity. I'm joking, obviously, right? I proactively denounce anything anyone has ever said on the show. See how I said it right this time? Right. But
now that there's something at stake.
Yeah, now that there's something at stake, right? But, I mean, dude, some of the farce this week is directly involved with, don't be worried about us controlling you. Worry about government controlling you. And I hate to go, you know, we're going full libertarian, right at the start. Right at the start. But, dude, did you see this? And right when we were talking about, like, oh, maybe we're past this COVID stuff and everything, the director general of the World Health Organization published a piece in Time magazine, COVID-19 Shows Why the World Needs a Pandemic Agreement. The contradiction internal to this article.
Can we agree not to have one again? Can we just all agree not to have one again?
I mean, that would be the ideal, except obviously he wants the opposite. First of all, I know apparently I'm known for pronouncing directors' names properly. I guess that's what Midsider Tom said in the Discord. But this guy, Dr. Adhanom? Like, is his name Ad Hominem?
Yes,
like,
his name is Dr. Ad Hominem Ghebreyesus. There are too many letters in this name, first of all.
I thought it was Ghebreyesus is how I would say that, or Ghebreyesus is how I would say that. But his first name seems like Ad Hominem.
There needs to be another syllable somehow in there, but yes, I think you're the closest one. But somehow there is an extra syllable, or there needs to be one more syllable. We're missing a syllable.
Okay, so I want to just read. I pulled out a bunch of stuff so you guys could get the idea of what he's saying. I want to read all of this, then I want to have us talk about it. So, many of WHO's critics have pointed to my use of pandemic on March 11, 2020 as evidence that WHO was late in taking the threat of COVID-19 seriously. By that stage, more than 118,000 cases had been reported in 114 countries and more than 4,000 deaths. The horse had bolted. Now, William, I'm going to stop here for a second, okay? Remember when this all first happened and you guys asked me for a number of acceptable deaths and I was like, like a million? And we lost a listener over it and there was a big kerfuffle? In the world, how is 4,000 deaths notable?
It sounds like a, I don't know. It sounds like a single hour in the Ukraine-Russia conflict, minutes in a typical ethnic cleansing in Africa where this guy is from. Isn't this guy from Ethiopia? Is he some, like, left-wing radical? I'm looking him up now to make sure I'm because the name is weird enough that it stuck out in my brain. Yeah, he's a member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, a left-wing extremist group in Ethiopia, a political party there, part of the civil war. Yeah, yeah. So great. I mean, this could be ad hominem, right? But he's, you know, receives endorsements from the African Union, played a critical role in the Ebola virus epidemic. So, okay.
So
sure.
This guy
So what I'm saying here, I'm not attacking him as a doctor, right? I'm attacking him because he's putting up political solutions. I'm going to look at his political history. He's a left-wing, right. He's a Marxist, right? He's an African Marxist.
He's Fauci on steroids, could we say?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's just interesting to me that the pragmatism of it, yes, where, you know, I don't want to compare to war necessarily because war is horrific and should be considered an outlier event. But you're going to tell me.
Well, hold on. So are pandemics. That's why I'm comparing it. I'm pushing back on this right away.
Okay. I'll accept that. I'll accept that.
These are the two things, and in the right order, it's disease and then war, that kill the most humans across when we zoom out on human history, right? So
yes.
We do have to compare it to war. This is the equivalent to war in that way.
Okay, let's continue. Of course, every sovereign government is responsible for protecting its people, but in a pandemic, no country can truly protect itself without working with other countries, especially those with the least financial, technical, or political capital, to ensure they too are protected. A global threat demands a global coordinated response.
From each according to their ability, to each according to their need. It's right there.
That was the first thing I was going to say.
What about the role of government is to protect its citizens? No, it's to protect the rights of its citizens. That's a very different thing to do.
Right. And that was the second thing I was going to say. And then the third thing, of course, is the idea that no country can truly protect itself in the same sense that he would say no individual can truly protect itself.
I mean, it takes a village.
Right. Exactly. You could, in this sense, you could have truly shut the borders and then done what you needed to internal to your country. I mean, isn't that what New Zealand did?
Yeah.
Tell me that New Zealand couldn't protect itself.
Yeah. And it didn't work, right? Like they still got the disease.
Well, I'm not saying you can actually stop disease by shutting your borders, but my point is you can shut yourself off from the rest of the world and take care of your own country. It doesn't require other countries, as he's claiming. Countries have recognized that, which is why they decided to strengthen the IHR and in December 2021 to develop an international agreement to pandemic preparedness and response, a legally binding generational pact to work together to keep things and each other safe. Now, let's not get into a discussion here of is there such thing as international law, right? But a more pernicious problem is the avalanche of lies, fake news, and conspiracy theories about the pandemic agreement that are propagating on social media and traditional media. Now, William, I'm sure even the conversation we've had so far, he would categorize under lies, fake news, and conspiracy theories, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that should be our new tagline. Maybe we'll get more listeners if we put that right on our tagline. What is it? Lies? Hold on. There's so much wall texture.
The
avalanche of lies, fake news, and conspiracy theories. We should just change our tagline to an avalanche of lies, fake news, and conspiracy theories.
I think that might be a pretty good reboot. I'm kind of feeling that right now.
Yeah.
Just as the pandemic itself was hampered by mis and disinformation, so the agreement's negotiators are operating amid a frenzy of falsehoods. That the agreement is a power grab by WHO. That it will give WHO power to impose lockdowns or vaccine mandates on countries. Or that it's an attack on freedom. Now here's the deal, William. I'm going to read the rest of what he wrote. But I do think here there is a line where the question always comes up of true believers versus puppet masters. And I think it is possible that this guy is a true believer and doesn't see it as a power grab, or he doesn't see it as an attack on freedom, that he genuinely thinks this is the way to freedom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, given his political background, I think I agree with you. I think, but at the same time, why would, it's still gaslighting, right? He's part of the ones being gaslit, right?
Correct. He's so deep in the gaslighting that he is a tool to gaslight other people.
Yeah.
These claims are completely false. There's the gaslighting. Who does not have and has never had the power to impose anything on anyone? We don't want that power, and we're not trying to get it. Now, this is where I think the projection is going on, William. I think he has projected that. I don't think he wants that power, and I don't think he's trying to get it. I think he genuinely is trying to do what he thinks is right for world health, because he holds the premise that you can't do it alone, you can't protect yourself alone, and the poorest countries need the help of the richest countries. And that's where his, as you said, Marxism comes in. However, I think he's missing the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
The agreement is
what killed more folks in poor countries during lockdowns? Was it the disease or was it the lockdowns? We already know the answer to that.
Is that even poor countries or is that every person?
Every country, I'm sure. But I know the numbers are true for poor countries.
Right. Well, and that's not even talking about, if you want to talk about what it did to us mentally, when we had all of these luxuries to be locked down in, what would lockdowns have done to people who don't have those luxuries? Can you imagine? That's like being kept in solitary confinement.
Well, I'm just talking about that.
In prison.
Yeah. Well, I don't think a lot of those poor countries really participated in lockdowns. But the economic costs, we know how much economic decline, like there's a formula for where economic decline into human lives lost. Because that inevitably happens.
Yeah. Well, and then there's, as you said, if you're that poor, can you even logistically have a lockdown?
Yeah. What does lockdown mean? Yeah.
Right. Doesn't lockdown presuppose you have thick walls and can lock your doors and keep chemicals and keep bacteria and other things out?
Yeah.
If you can't do that because of the conditions you're living in, a lockdown isn't possible. The agreement is being written by countries for countries. Hey, by the way, do you like how he stole Abraham Lincoln's line there? By countries for countries?
Yeah.
And will be implemented in countries' accordance with their own national laws. So if our own national laws disagree with the treaty we sign with the UN or WHO, what happens then? No country will be signing away its sovereignty. Why would it? Legally binding international agreements are not new. No, they're not new, but also don't they limit the sovereignty of each nation? They are a tool that countries have used since the end of the Second World War to meet common threats with a common response. The Geneva Conventions, the UN Charter, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the Paris Agreement, the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, and the WHO Constitution, to name a few. Do you notice, William, how this list goes on? You know, it starts with the Geneva Conventions, which is not limiting the natural rights of individual citizens because it's how
not,
countries are
and
dealing
not,
with each other.
And wildly not followed, right? I mean,
well, that's
you remember my joke? I think it's been a long time since I told this one, but we used to kid, because when I had my CAC card, they call it, my military ID, when I was deployed, it had the Geneva Convention number on the back. I was a Geneva Convention number 4, which made sure that if I was captured by the terrorists, that I would be given my own room and the chance to communicate with my family once a week, among other benefits as part of the Geneva Convention. So I'm sure if I had been captured while I was in Iraq or Afghanistan, that I could just show them my CAC card, right? And they would have given me my own accommodations and let me write home once a week.
Well, they shouldn't even need to see that. I mean, it's international law.
I know, but how would they know I'm a 4 and not a 1? You know?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So, yeah. Those Geneva Conventions, I'm sure they're followed.
Well, and even beyond that, what I was saying was that it transitioned into the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which that's limiting individual choice, is it not?
Yeah.
So his last line here is, all are binding agreements in international law, and none give UN staff, including me, power to dictate to sovereign states. The contradiction here, though, William, is, and tell me if I'm wrong, if we are going into a pandemic agreement and the WHO gets the set, how we deal with the pandemic, isn't the WHO then dictating to sovereign states?
Yeah, I think they're saying because you agreed to it, it's not us dictating it to you. But they're the ones writing it, and they're the ones controlling what's getting put in there, right? And they're the ones that are using their framework to, their non-rights respecting framework to come up with this plan to begin with. They're the ones living in this fantasy world where states get to agree, and then therefore that means their citizens agree. And that's not the way, that is not a American way of looking at it, right?
Well,
the American
exactly
way of looking at it is that the people,
say.
The individuals' rights must be respected. And if they, you know, it's by consent of the governed. And so if, you know, if we don't want it, then we're not going to do it.
Well, and consent of the governed, William, and this is the key point, is not a one-time vote. Because you can vote for a dictator. And if you vote for a dictator, well, then they're a dictator forever. You can vote for someone and...
Right. That's why it has to be to protect. It has to be under the framework of individual rights.
Right. Because otherwise you can vote to cede away your power. And this is essentially what he's saying here. He's ironically, you said he's not looking at it from an American perspective. He's trying to. He's trying to hold the premise of natural rights and collectivism at the same time. And he doesn't see the contradiction there.
Yeah.
Because the problem is you sign this treaty away and this treaty says the WHO gets to decide what to do in a pandemic. You have now, in perpetuity, ceded away the sovereignty of the state during the pandemic. That contradicts American values in the sense that you need to keep checking in over and over again, and you're allowed to disagree with what's going on. And isn't this why in America we have the debate between federal rights and states' rights? Now, I'm sure you would agree with me, there's no such thing as federal rights or states' rights. It's all individual rights. But right. The point is, as I've said over and over again on this show, and this is why this is such a big deal to me, everything has to be local. Okay? Yeah. I know we're living in a globalized time.
I think half the states' rights debate can be reframed as separation of powers issues, and then you can actually have a healthy debate. And then the other half comes into what you're describing, where it's like, hey, we're only talking about individual rights here, and then in the framework of separation of powers, we could talk about, okay, the federal government's role is this, the state's government's role is this. It's not a rights issue. It's a separation of powers issue.
And to me, the separation of powers issues is who can best understand the context in which individual rights are exercised. And my argument is that will always be best understood on a local level, because the further and further away you get geographically, the less and less you understand the context individuals live in. So we always have to have a separation of power that favors local government over... give me an antonym for local that's not federal or national or global or international.
I would say local it needs to be more decentralized, right? It cannot... Right. It has to be as decentralized as is practical technologically.
Practical technologically and morally. And that's the problem that the federal government was, or that's what they were trying to answer with the federal government, the idea of if states come into conflict, who decides that conflict? That's what they were trying to answer with the federal government. However, when we go with the WHO here in this pandemic agreement, we're going too far to the other extreme where we're ceding away our power and they just become a dictator and they just assume, oh, we're not a dictator because we respect natural rights. It doesn't work that way.
We've got to follow the science.
Well, and speaking of following the science and it not working that way and locally who you're spending time with, I mean, we're seeing this happen in our own country. This is an article you submitted, William, where it says the feds are coming for, quote, extremist gamers. This has to do with a report by the Government Accountability Office, which... It's GAO.gov. William, before I even read this paragraph, how can the government have its own accountability office?
It's basically like, I feel like it's just a ploy for Congress to have reports so that they can spend more money. Isn't that what the GAO is for? They just generate reports so that to support legislation that spends more money.
I mean, if we're here and we're an avalanche of lies, fake news, and conspiracy theories, that's my biggest conspiracy theory of all. All of this is just created to create jobs for people who don't think they can be productive in reality.
Yeah, jobs for
so they
incompetent.
Come up with stuff yeah. to do. But my point was, you can't hold yourself, like, individuals can hold themselves accountable, but ideally they would have another person who they trust who holds them accountable. That's the value of, say, a teacher or a coach. Well, the government's own office that holds them accountable is nonsense to me. So here's the paragraph that stood out to me from this article. The federal government says that sharing information with gaming and social media companies is another avenue to identify and combat extremism. The government also recognizes that there are constitutional legal questions about Americans' free speech rights. According to the Gao report, both the FBI and DHS indicated that they are proceeding with caution in light of federal litigation on such matters, including one case on its way to the Supreme Court. So it's interesting to me, William, that they openly know they're contradicting rights, and this is already at the Supreme Court. And to me, the first sentence says it all. Sharing information with gaming and social media companies. This is just a way to blend, to merge the corporate sphere and the government sphere, so they are operating hand in hand. And that is extremely, extremely dangerous. And for me, of all people, to be saying that, where I remember, you know, decades ago complaining about people who always complained about the corporations, right? But this is corporatism at its finest, but it's corporatism at its finest this time, not initiated by corporate lobbyists trying to use the government to their advantage. It's by government lobbyists trying to amass more power by getting information that they, by all means, do not have a legal or moral right to.
Yeah, I think there's there's two threads to pull on here, Justin. One is from gaming history and the other is from banking history. So let's do the first one first. Gaming history. Justin, after 9/11, there was a huge push to do this same thing. They wanted to wiretap Xbox Live was the big thing because Xbox Live was encrypted communications. And yes, they were public, but like you could just have anonymous encrypted communications with your friends in Xbox Live. And they were afraid that terrorists were going to use that to communicate. Now, here's the thing. Most of the time, like back then, they were just using SMS because that was all there was that was reliable, right? Then they started using some apps, but that was much, much, much later, right? Like apps didn't really exist, right? Until what, 2009? 2000 was really when apps really started taking off. And so it didn't work, right? Like here's the thing. If you're going to be the kinds of things that they should be legitimately targeting are not going to be the kind of people who are actual terrorists are either A, too lazy and not going to use something complicated. So they're not going to use this. They're just going to use normal communications. Or B, too sophisticated, where they're going to just use something like Signal or Telegram or something that's point-to-point encrypted. And then they have to come at it through other means. So that's a little bit about your on the gaming history side. Another point on the gaming history side is this is the satanic panic of the 80s coming back to us again, right? This is coming to us in the gaming industry right around the Gamergate 2.0, which is going on right now. The fact that gamers are this decentralized around different games and gaming communities, they're this decentralized nebulous mob that usually aren't very, you know, political, right? Because they're not founded on politics, but there's this constant attempt to control these the cultures that form around gaming. And I think part of it is because of that there are so many young people in gaming. And so I think that there's a worrying side of this, Justin, of Like, how dare, and I think it ties into our later story, how dare kids or young people, you know, form and communicate, right? And do these things, right? And game, right? Now the financial side. So, Justin, I know we're pretty far along on this, and I think I've brought it up on the show before, but the financial surveillance industry with between banking and the federal government is out of this world, out of control, just like crazy. All transactions over a certain dollar amount are sent to the government from your bank account.
What's anybody, that amount, do you know?
The thing is, it depends. It's something really low, like $500 if you're considered suspicious. And this is what I wanted to talk about. If you're considered suspicious, right, it's up to the bank to consider whether you're suspicious or not.
Yeah.
And the same thing about sharing information. There's a reason why the government is pushing to do this, because legally it would be considered antitrust if the gaming companies got together and started sharing data on users and banning them and doing stuff like that. Like, you would get into some antitrust issues and some other legal issues, right? Like privacy issues, things like that, right? Like, you really couldn't do this sort of thing. Sharing intel in this way becomes very complicated. Who owns the data? What if it gets breached? Who's responsible? How are you going to secure it? But guess what? If the government does it, none of that matters, right? Because the government can just absolve itself from any responsibility. It doesn't matter if it gets breached. It doesn't matter if the data is wrong, right?
Yeah.
The government can't get sued. Like, if Riot Games labels you a terrorist and tells EA to block your account, and then you find out about it, you can sue Riot Games for libel, right? But you can't sue the government for libel, right? You will never know what their assessment of you is. So that's why, if we're already doing that in banking, this is just another area to control, right? Now I'm sounding like a tinfoil hat conspiracy. This is the natural evolution of the next step to try and control these uncontrollable cultural elements. It's interesting. You know, I pulled two graphics from the 45-page report. That's actually, I added the link to the show notes. So they have an example of viral nature of domestic violent extremist use of online platforms. And here's how they break it down, Justin. They've got live stream is where you start. So think Twitch and YouTube. Other video content hosting platforms. So you start with live. You go to YouTube. Then social media platforms and forums. And then user-to-user sharing. So this is how you grow an extremist audience. Justin, does that make a friend of the show... Kurt, a extremist? I mean, isn't that how he builds his audience? He live streams and he posts videos to YouTube, then social media, Twitter, and then people share the stuff he works on.
Well, this is what they've always done. This is what they've always done. And
isn't this
wisely...
Mr. Beast? Isn't this who else? This is Mudahar. Come on, I think anybody. This is social media. Like, there's pointing to it and saying, this is how terrorists are born, and they have like X's right on top of different people.
Right. But this is the projection of it, William. And what I mean by that is, you wisely pointed out that their main problem is that they can't control this industry. Because think of what they did with movies. Think of what they did with radio. Think of what they did with music. Think of what they did with television. It's all the same thing. Newspapers, right? The news industry, where they would say, oh, we're doing this because if we don't, the other side will do it. Or if we don't do it explicitly, implicitly, everyone will take whatever ideas they want, or they're internalized the wrong ideas. All they're doing now is they're trying to exercise control over this process because they currently cannot. And are they wrong? No. But they're dropping the context of this is how all communication happens in this cycle.
Yeah.
So the only solution can be for them to control the cycle. You can't change the cycle. This is just how it works.
Right. So I wanted to point out that this is how they envision extremism. So you have to think to yourself, well, how are they going to stop it then? So I talked about how the gaming companies can't really share this kind of information. Hold on. But how do they want to? How do they propose to? Well,
they
you know what the government.
To it. This is you the
what
the,
hold on,
hat.
Hold on. I'm gonna get to it. You know how they propose to fix it. This is how they propose to fix it. The gaming companies can't block or demote or limit or ban these people because that would be censorship. But they can have the gaming companies do it, the social media companies do it. So the answer is for the government to aggregate all the data and for the businesses as private, you know, private companies to censor it. So this is exactly what they're trying to set up. And this is what this report is actually outlining.
Right. But even that's not stopping domestic violent extremism.
Right.
All that's
right.
doing is the government is selecting the people who it doesn't like. That's it. It's just another mechanism of control. That's all it is.
Yep.
That's the tinfoil hat. That's
100%.
The... I think he would agree with that, actually. Not to put words in his mouth, but just based on his movies. That's the avalanche of conspiracy theory right now. That is the conspiracy theory that I am saying, and that I don't think is a conspiracy theory. That is what they do. They want to make it so you can't talk about and you can't be around people that they don't want you to be around, and that you can't talk about what they don't want you to talk about.
Well, we have a list of what they don't want you to talk about, Justin. I posted that in here too. So let's run down it quickly, because I think it's interesting to see what the government hates. Racially or ethnically motivated violent extremism, domestic violent extremists with ideological agendas derived from bias, often related by race or ethnicity. And we know that means everything but white and Jewish people, right? We know that.
Right. I was going to say, even that's bullshit because they foster that among certain groups.
Yep. Anti-government or anti-authority violent extremism. So we know that only means on, and they actually say it here, including oppression to perceived economic, social, racial hierarchies or perceived government overreach, negligence, or illegitimacy. So, yeah, we definitely don't want like a citizen-based GAO, right? Some group actually holding the government accountable. That would be considered extreme, right?
Right.
You're automatically suspicious if you're anti-government or anti-authority. So far I'm 2 for 2, Justin. I don't know about you. Let's do the third one. Animal rights or environmental violent extremism. Domestic violent extremists who seek to end or mitigate perceived cruelty, harm, or exploitation of animals, or perceived exploitation or destruction of natural resources in the environment. We know what that means in practice, right? Like, nobody gives a shit about the actual environmentalist movement. What we care about is making sure that the anti-oil and anti-pipeline people can keep, doing their protests and disruptions and things like that, right? So this is about keeping those people safe. Abortion-related violent extremism. Domestic violent extremists with ideological agendas related to abortion, including individuals who advocate for violence in support of either pro-life or pro-choice beliefs. Do we actually believe that they're protecting pro-life people here? And again, I'm not a conservative, so I'm just pointing out based on the track record. And the last one, all other domestic terrorism threats. So here's the catch-all. Such agendas may combine personal grievances with beliefs of political concerns and aspects of conspiracy theories, as well as bias related to religion, gender, or sexual orientation. So I'm biased against gender. I think gender is an anti-concept, so I think I fit that one too. So I don't know. I think I'm 3 of 5. Well, like 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I'm 3 of 5 here. So I'm definitely going to be tracked.
Well, it says as well as bias related to religion, gender, or sexual orientation. They would say such agendas may combine personal grievances and beliefs with political concerns and aspects of conspiracy theories. They would probably say that describes this show.
Well, yeah. They have a person holding a gun, right?
Yeah.
You know, I saw a meme today, Justin, and it was funny because it was true. Someone said was something along the lines of, you know, if it's a Sunday afternoon and you hear gunshots and you smile and think of freedom, then you must live out in the country in a safe community, because, you know, it's hunting season and people are out hunting and shooting. And I was like, yeah, most people who live in the city, if they wake up and hear gunshots in the morning, they're scared. But yeah, if you live out in the country and you hear a gunshot, you're like, oh, I hope they got a good buck.
Yeah, that's funny. And it again, that goes back to my point about local, right? Local, decentralized. But the way they get you here, William, is it's the use of the phrase violent extremism, because they get to define what extremism is and they get to define what violent is. But most people are going to look at
these
things.
The mostly peaceful protest was, you know, and the definition of Chaz was anti-government. But in that case, it wasn't, right?
Right.
It was not We were not concerned with how those people were communicating. We were not concerned with how the media was covering them.
But most people are going to look at this, because I look at this and I go, well, none of this applies to me because I'm not a violent extremist. And that's the way most people are going to look at this. And that's why
the problem is words are violence, Justin. So there is not a single gaming company or social media company that they're going to partner with that doesn't see words as violence. So, so yeah, you are violent, Justin. You have spoken the words.
Right. And in that case, this can apply to anyone. And that's why it's difficult, because most people will dismiss this without realizing this applies to them as much as anyone else, because they play with our self-image versus how they label us, and they use that against us.
Yep. And this really gets at our freedom of association. That's the part that I want to talk about. People usually attack this as a violation of free speech, but Justin, this is a violation of freedom of association. If the government can go in and dictate to businesses, either directly or through coercion, indirectly, and say, hey, this person, we don't like them for whatever reason, you need to make sure they don't gain an audience, that they don't gain influence, that they aren't allowed to associate with people who would otherwise want to talk to them. That is a violation of the First Amendment, just as much as you saying, you cannot say these things, or we're going to prevent you from saying these things. So, Justin, this is something that I've never liked about the whole freedom of reach versus freedom of speech, the way that is framed, is yes, in the sense of, your free speech right doesn't make it so that you can force Twitter to put you on the trending page. But it also protects you from the government saying that you should not go on the trending page.
Yeah, there's a difference between the private company doing it and the government doing it.
Right. You do have freedom of reach, freedom from the government interfering with your reach.
Right. You don't have the right to tell a private company who they want to list on the trending page or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. It's a great point. Because as we see in our next story here, they can look at social media and come up with things that I don't even know how they come up with. You're going to have to explain to me, William, what exactly the grounds are for this next story. Massachusetts investigators pursue 6 eighth graders who created a mock slave auction on Snapchat. A group on Snapchat was created overnight from February 8th through February 9th by a group of eighth grade students in the town of Southwick, Massachusetts. And for some reason, the article needs to tell you it's located about 100 miles west of Boston, because anybody cares about that. What's the first thing here, William? A group, right? A group was created. During the chat, some participants expressed hateful and racist comments, including wanting to commit acts of violence toward people of color, racial slurs, derogatory pictures and videos, and a mock slave auction directed at 2 particular students, investigators said. Now, William, I am not defending this. I'm not saying this is okay. However, is this not common? Has this not always been common among eighth grade boys?
I'm trying to think, like, oh my God, if we had had any of my eighth grade conversations with any of my friends online where it was saved. I mean, Snapchat, people forget that you can screenshot messages, right? People could save the messages even though they disappear. But I think I would be in jail too right now. Isn't that, like, again, not defending what they're saying, the content. I'm saying this is normal behavior. This is normal behavior that should be discussed and kept at the school or parental level, even if it needs to be at the parental level. I'm just imagining, like, we're seeing this in the media, right? We know that always gets it wrong, right? So I'm trying to imagine someone making a joke and they just memeing like a normal 4chan thread, and somehow now they're going to go to jail. Like, this would be a normal 4chan. Even I read this in the worst light, wouldn't that just be a normal 4chan post?
And that's what I don't understand, William. So I never, like, I was very much with the South Park style of humor. I still can be in my private life, making jokes about, I had a friend who was overweight and I would make fun of him for being fat, right? And making jokes about race and religion and things like that. However,
Justin, you're not my only Polish friend, and there have been many Polish jokes tossed around with my friend.
Well, I'm going to say something right now, and at the risk of getting somebody at Disney in trouble, I won't say the employee, but so we went to an event at Disney, dinner and a show, which involved humor. And when different people stepped up, the guy who was checking us in would make jokes about their names. And the people before us were the walkers. And so he said, "None of you are runners, you're just all walkers." And they all groaned because it was a dad joke. And he stepped up and saw my last name. And he was like, I have no jokes about your last name. And I made some sort of quip about like, yeah, well, that's okay. We went through enough. We don't need jokes made at our expense. And then he was like, yeah, that's true. Your name is very World War II. Your name is very systematically exterminated, right? And that's funny, right?
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
funny, right? I didn't get mad about that or anything because it's true, right? If you look at World War II, what happened to Polish people? But to think like a Disney employee made that joke, can you imagine if they know he made that joke? But he knew from the context I wasn't going to get mad about it because I opened yeah. the door. You know what I mean? Like, that's what humor's supposed to be.
And if you've ever been in a group of friends, like, I don't know if these two people that were picked on were part of the friend group or part of the, not part of the friend
group. I'm guessing not. I'm going to guess not based on the
fact. I'm going to guess not as well, but like, we don't know. Making fun of other people in eighth grade, again, isn't this normal behavior? Are we really criminalizing this behavior? Is this a hate crime? Is this a literal hate crime?
And when we say directed at, was it really like if these two were not in the group? How is it directed at them if they were just talking
about it? Oh, it's cyberbullying, Justin. We remember the cyberbullying panic, right? Right. Again, well, there is such a thing as cyberbullying. That's not what I'm saying, but there's a panic about it.
Right. And that's the one part where, like, obviously I don't agree with these ideas of cyberbullying and things like that, but I don't think when I made these jokes I ever made it about somebody who I didn't sort of have their consent, if that makes sense. To me, it was only funny if somebody was in on the joke because it's always been about minimizing these things. Like, when that... Disney
You're belittling the thing. Yeah, belittling the difference.
We were belittling genocide when the Disney employee made that joke. You get what I'm saying? It's like, it's ridiculous. They tried to exterminate the Polish people, right? It's belittling the fact that people think race and religion and these things matter about the person and the content of their character, right? It's very Martin Luther King Jr. in that way. So that's the one thing that I think... I would not like, you know, the directed at two particular students, but that's a small point to argue over, right? The
you have to wonder how traumatizing it is for the supposed victims to be hauled into the policeman's office and told you've been a victim of a hate crime.
Right. What happened to we don't want to re-traumatize people, but we can traumatize them, right?
Yeah, yeah. You didn't even know it. These people were posting, memeing to each other in a 4chan style thread on Snapchat. And getting laughs with their buddies. And now, you know. And Justin, we've been assuming that it was males. It could be all females, too. This could be a catfight.
We have no idea.
We have no idea.
One of the students has been charged with interference with civil rights, threatening to commit a crime, and witness interference.
Witness interference! What is going on here? There has to be more to this story if witness interference. Was there
a second participant has been charged with interference with civil rights and threatening to commit a crime. The remaining four have been charged with threatening to commit a crime. So if you're saying we're going to have a slave auction jokingly, like...
Wait, are you
threatening to commit a crime?
I don't know. What was the crime? The inappropriate, what was it? Derogatory slurs, maybe? Criminal acts of violence toward people of color. So maybe that one? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what interference with civil rights means. That seems like too abstract. That seems like a floating abstraction of a law. Like, don't you need specific things that you do that are interference with civil rights?
Were they trying to end black suffrage?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, wouldn't that then be you're trying to buy and trade slaves?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be a plot twist. They could be. I'm sure, Justin, that these are all minority people that have been charged, and it's actually white people that they were making fun of, right?
Yeah. Hampton District Attorney Anthony Giuliani said he met personally with the identified victims and their families. There's the traumas, traumatizing people, right? Hatred and racism have no place in this community. And where this behavior becomes criminal, I will ensure that we act. Giuliani said in a
written
statement.
Hold on. Words are criminal.
Yeah.
Words are criminal. Words by children are criminal.
Right, because there's no actual... That's the thing. Like, how do they interfere with civil rights by having a Snapchat conversation? There is no question that the alleged behavior of these six juveniles is vile, cruel, and contemptible. I mean, look, there's an argument that it is. That doesn't mean it's illegal. Seeing it and facing the reality that these thoughts, that this ugliness can exist within middle school students here in this community in 2024 is discouraging, unsettling, and deeply frustrating, he added. And then he said, make sure you continue to vote for me in the next election. I added that last part, but isn't this just a
this is
campaign piece?
I'm glad you found this story. It definitely makes me angry. Again, I don't understand how this can be criminal. This should be behavior corrected by parents, not by the state. I don't know. I don't understand. I don't understand why we think that the state needs to be involved in words spoken by children. That just does not compute to me at all.
No, I agree. And that's why it doesn't make me angry. I just laugh at it because what does interference with civil rights mean? Like
eighth graders can't vote. What civil rights are being violated?
That's what I mean. Like, if I walk in front of you in public and stop you from walking where you want to walk, is that an interference with your civil rights because your ability to move? Like, I don't, like, what is interference
know.
With so? Like,
I don't know. I can't wait to read the
charges. What does witness
interference
mean on Snapchat?
Will they be tried as adults, Justin? This serious crime.
They're trying me as an adult, I'll say that. That was a pun, get it? But this goes back to, I think, deeper issues about school and the way we treat children. And I found an article this week that was interesting to me because it resonates with my experience in the classroom. It says, need to use the bathroom during class? At this Colorado school, students must first show their ID. Now, there's a couple of ridiculous things here. One, it's ridiculous that people are upset that they have to show their ID to go to the bathroom. And two, this exposes the issue with the entire public school system. So I'm going to read a bunch of stuff here, and then we're going to get into it. Okay? Students are free to use restrooms without first presenting an ID only in the few minutes between classes. That's passing, right? No one can stop you if you're going from between classes and there's no class period and use the bathroom. The student ID policy introduced this semester is primarily aimed at keeping students safe and curbing a tendency among some students to dawdle in the restroom and even commit vandalism, according to Principal Scott Richardson.
Vandalism in the high school bathroom? That can't be true, Justin.
That's sarcasm, correct? Students must also show their ID to get their meal at lunch, a half hour period, which has cut down on the time it takes to serve lunch, Richardson said. Going to IDs tremendously reduced the number of students loitering in restrooms, increased responsible and appropriate restroom use, increased the speed of the lunch line, and improved the school's ability to provide a safe atmosphere for all students, he wrote an email to the Colorado Sun. The school has also reported a huge decrease in acts of vandalism in restrooms. Aileen said she understands, this is one of the students, that school staff rely on student ID system to keep everyone safe, something she appreciates, and that educators and administrators want students to learn how to be responsible by bringing their ID to school every day. But she also believes there is a better excuse. I know that we're young adults and they're trying to teach us, she said, but I just feel that way is not really the way to start teaching us to be responsible. First of all, William, the idea that it's an imposition to have to bring your ID every day is ridiculous. Because if I'm driving without a license and get pulled over, isn't that illegal?
Yeah.
So this is one of the things where kids complain about things that they shouldn't complain about because they have no discipline from their parents. Okay? Here's the second thing, though. the idea that you need to be kept track of to go to the bathroom, I have complete sympathy for them. That is a basic human need to go to the bathroom. You shouldn't have to ask. You shouldn't have to defend yourself. It shouldn't be something that somebody else controls. However, here's the problem. As they said, some students will dawdle and commit vandalism. William, there are not enough adults to take care of all of the kids at any school. Because, one, the kids just outnumber the adults. But two, there are kids who don't want to be at school. And because we've decided education is a right, not the opportunity for education is a right, but that education is a right, everybody is forced to go to school, which means that every school, there's a certain percentage of the population that has no interest in going to school and is going to do two things. One, at best, just try to get out of class. Anytime I leave my classroom during the day, William, there are kids just wandering around campus and no one's doing anything about them. Two, at worst, they are going to vandalize and cause problems because they don't want to be there. And they're finding other ways to occupy themselves.
Maybe I'm from a bygone arcane era, but if you were caught out in the hall anywhere on campus and you were A, not a senior, because seniors had certain things that they could do, or B, didn't have a hall pass, you got a detention, just no questions asked. There wasn't anything. Any adult passing you in the hall would be like, got your hall pass? And if not, it would be, where are you going? I will take you there, or here's your detention.
Okay, well, that's where, first of all, there's not enough adults. But second of all, as I just said, they don't want to be in school. They don't care if you give them detention. One, they'll just skip detention. Or two, they'll be like, okay, good, I don't have to be in class now.
Yeah.
And the problem is, here's the problem. The majority is suffering because of the minority. And I don't mean that, that's not coded language, anyone out there. The larger number of students is suffering because of the smaller number of students.
Yeah, this is a failure of setting up a proper environment for the students, right? If you don't have enough adults, if your school is so large that you don't have enough adults that can notice when there are a student wandering around the hallways, like either, yeah, you've not set up the right environment.
Right. But I'm saying it's even more fundamental than that. You haven't set up the right environment in the sense that you've set up an environment where there are people who don't want to be there to the point that they don't want to be there, that they're willing to be destructive about it. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. That brings us to the end of this segment. Let's talk about some movies in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused. As always, if you'd like to continue the conversation with us during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. I always like to drop the trailers in there, usually the Saturday before we record the episode. So that gives you an opportunity to watch the trailers whenever you would like. Or, you know, just join the Discord and show us some farce. Show us some farce that you would like us to witness. Just go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link and the Discord code is in there. William, for this week's movie, I would like to review The American Society of Magical Negroes.
Oh, man. I've been dying to hear your review of this. Tell me how full the theater was, first of all.
It was empty.
I've seen other people on Snapchat showing empty theaters for this movie.
There were like six other people in there, I think. Yeah. I mean, when I stood up at the end of the movie, that's what I saw. I'm noticing a new thing now, William, because of these AMC passes, that we go to book movies and like the theater will look full or a bunch of seats will be taken and then those people never show up. So like We're ending up now.
I think there's something going on. I think that's a marketing thing to make it look like, oh, this movie's about to sell out. I really think it's that. Because remember when the Star Wars movie flopped, the third one, you know, there were, it had this big drop in the second week where no one was coming to the theater. But it was still showing sold out everywhere.
Well, it's fucking annoying because they're booking all the seats in the middle of the theater. So unless we right away go online and book our tickets, we're not getting seats in the middle of the screen anymore.
But what does it matter? Just take the seats in the middle after the movie starts.
Well, I mean, that's what we're going to have to start doing. Right now, we've been respectful of the social contract and thinking if those people show up, we want to leave the seats open for them. But we're going to have to start doing that.
Back in my day, all movies were GA and you just sat where you sat.
I know it's different nowadays, but that's just an annoying thing. So anyway, this movie is based on the concept of the magical Negro trope. Do you know what this trope is?
Yes.
Yeah. What was the movie? Oh, remember the movie about the classical musician in France? What was that movie called?
Amadeus?
Chevalier? No, Chevalier, remember?
Oh.
I saw that movie. And his mother showed up and she was the magical Negro where suddenly she knew how to help him and she was the only one and that was her entire role in the movie. Right. That it's playing on that trope, but it takes it and it makes it fantastical, where not only does that trope exist in stories, but it exists in real life as well, where there's a group of black people who their entire job is to diffuse white rage, essentially, and they have to make themselves secondary to the white person. So whenever anything happens with the white person, they have to put the white person's needs ahead of their own. Now, what happens is the main character is put in this society and his first client is a white person in a design office, and he is given a job there in order to help him. And it turns out that white person is interested romantically in a woman that the main character had met independently of the client. So he had already met and flirted with this girl and had a connection with her. And now he has to forgo his romantic interest in the girl for the sake of the white person. But not just that. The reason they do this is to protect all black people, because the more white rage there is, the more likely they are to take it out on black people. And if anyone does not fulfill their assignment for the collective, if they are selfish and pursue their own needs, well then, the collective loses their magical powers. Now, William, before I continue and I give my review, do I sound insane for going to see this movie?
A bit. I mean, it has selfishness in it, right?
Okay, that's what I was going to say to you. Does it change your opinion that those words, collective and selfish, were used in the movie itself?
No. I am always skeptical of movies that try to cover selfishness from Hollywood. So,
okay.
If anything, well, that makes it, that's like, oh, this premise looks ridiculous. And then also they're covering selfishness, so it can't possibly be good.
Well, and that's the question here. Okay. That's the question here is, I'm going to be honest, I don't know how to take this movie, because can you guess what was explicitly mentioned in this movie?
Zack Snyder.
Close. What does Zack Snyder want to adapt?
The Fountainhead.
Okay. The Fountainhead was explicitly mentioned in this movie. Okay. Now, I found the director.
Ayn Rand was black? They turn all historical figures black. So.
I found the director on Instagram. Okay. Kobe Libby. He only has 2.5K followers. So I sent him a message. I want to know what he thinks. Now, is he going to respond to me? Probably not, because all chat invitations are hidden on Instagram, right? And I don't even think he's getting a deluge of comments right now, because the movie made less than a million. But in order to make you understand why I haven't done my review yet, I want to read what I wrote to him. Hi, congratulations on the release of your movie. I just got back from seeing it and found it enjoyable and insightful. Now, you may be saying, don't bullshit him. I'm not bullshitting him. First of all, if you get a major movie release, you deserve congratulations. Correct, William?
That's correct. I mean, he made a gross so far of $520,000.
Which is a lot fucking more than I made. So
exactly.
Good for him, right?
Your movie did not make that much. That's good.
Correct. So he deserves kudos for that. And it was, look, it had good production value. It had good acting in it. And I had a good time watching it. And it made good points. So I'm not lying here when I'm saying these things. I'd like to ask you a question about it that I hope you find interesting enough to respond to. Is the reference to the Fountainhead intended derisively or as a coy wink to the audience? I ask because Mick is the one who is in charge of the design, the company they are designers for, Meatbox. He's like a stand-in for sort of a Mark Zuckerberg type character. And there are comments in the movie about like how he's a capitalist and likes competition. And it seems to be that that's said in a bad way. Mick is the one who mentions trying to buy the Fountainhead, and he is painted negatively. Yet Arryn's the main character, seems to embody key ideas / elements of the novel. Arryn is an artist who starts out throwing his work away. At the beginning of the movie, his art piece is the only one at a gallery that is not purchased, so he throws it away because no one wants to buy it. Then ends up at the end of the movie, he says, I'm going to go back and do my art. And I'm not reading directly. I'm paraphrasing what I said here because I don't need to say this context to the director and writer. He wrote it. Someone says to him, no one likes your art. And Arryn replies, yeah, but I do. The word pride is even said in this plot thread. Arryn takes a job which is all about pleasing his client, even to his own detriment. And the society says he is selfish, that if he is selfish, the collective suffers. Thanks again. I hope to hear from you. Respectfully, Justin. Here's the thing, William. I don't see how a movie that says collective, selfish, I like my art, it doesn't matter if anybody else does, and is all about don't please the client, do what is best for you, and then mentions the Fountainhead, I don't see how those ideas couldn't have been taken from the Fountainhead, and that can't be an intentional reference. This movie, I don't know how to interpret it as not being against collectivism, because part of what he's saying in the movie, there's a whole scene, just like the Barbie speech, remember I said the end of the movie of Barbie has that great speech, right, where it's about she realizes she deserves to be alive. And I said, that's a great point. I just wish it wasn't in a terrible movie. Well, that point's in this movie, which isn't terrible. He, at one point, he says, I have a right to be alive. I have a right to be happy. I don't have to keep going out of my way to make other people happy and satisfied. I just want to be seen as me. And, you know, maybe they're not identifying the proper causes here, but I don't know how to interpret this movie as not being against collectivism, because he goes against, he's the hero, and he goes against the American Society of Magical Negroes when they tell him not to. They lose their powers, and then other members of the society are inspired by him and start going against it and standing up for themselves to their clients. I don't know how to interpret it as otherwise, other than anti-collectivism. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I say, see this for yourself. I'm left with a bro movie. This is a bro movie. And what I mean by that is it's not great. It's not terrible. It was enjoyable to watch, and I think it has a good message. I leave with a positive impression of this movie, that the main character stood up for himself as an individual and did what he needed to do regardless of the society at large, you know, the American culture at large, and regardless of the collective group that he tried to be forced into.
Do you think that this movie is suffering because of the trailer and the marketing?
Yes, because I almost didn't go to see it because I was like, I don't want to see a movie about, you know, how white people are evil.
Yeah. I think from what you, if there was a trailer like this, like the way you described that touched on that theme or hinted at that theme of, and made it a positive message where it wasn't going to be an us versus them sort of thing. You know, black versus white sort of thing, that it actually, it reframed that. I think that you would see what you're not seeing right now, which is they're, you know, I think it was 520 on the 15th, 470 on the 16th, 260 so far today. You know, you're not seeing a lot of people going to see this movie. And I think the trailer, if I remember, we both, I think I did not, I tackled it. I don't remember if you hugged it or not. But I probably tackled it,
but I took a risk because there was nothing else out this week that I wanted to see. And also, yeah, I wanted to see what direction it would go. Never in my wildest dreams would I thought it would go in the direction it went in. Because let me be clear, William.
Yeah.
It's not a great movie because it still has the idea that, it still has the idea of privilege in it. And what I mean by it is, how do you have a movie where the main character doesn't want to solely be judged for being black and he wants to be treated as he is, whereas that's how the movie sees white people, specifically white men, because there's a plot thread about women in this movie, which there's a twist at the end, which I think he was trying to set up a sequel, but that's never going to happen based on the money that's being made. It undermines the impact of the end. It basically had a Marvel scene right after the final scene where the movie ended, and I was like, oh, that's a decent ending. Good, that's a good ending. And then they had this extra scene. But the point I'm making is, it has this idea of privilege where, you know, white men walk around oblivious to the idea that people might not like them or that there are social pressures and societal pressures and collective pressures, which simply isn't true. I mean, this is where I said, I mean, do you remember years ago on the show where I said, where's my privilege? And I've asked that because I identify with the main character of the movie. Obviously, I don't know what it's like to be black. I don't know what he's gone through as a black man, right? However, I get what he's talking, like, he talks about when he goes out in public and, like, he apologizes to everyone because everyone keeps walking in front of him and ignoring him and disregarding him. William, how many times on the show have I talked about that? That you can't go out in public anymore because everybody just doesn't give a shit that you're around.
Yeah.
Don't I talk about that all the time?
Yeah.
And I have now made an active effort not to apologize to people, but I make an active effort where I just let other people do what they're going to do because they're not going to see me as a person, because that element of the social contract of individualism is gone, right? The idea that in order for my individual rights to be respected, I have to respect other people's. That's gone in the era of narcissism. But my point is, they still have this idea that white people don't go through any of this other stuff because it's not manifested in the specific way that it's manifested in with black people. And I mean specifically white men they're talking about.
When will we get back to the... Remember in the 90s, it was all about showing how we face the same problems, right? That the details and circumstances might be different, but we face the same problems. Like that was a theme in so many sitcoms and you know, teen programming back then. And it's definitely not... It's just completely absent now from anything.
Right. And that's the extra level that I really think this movie is going against collectivism, but I don't think this is an example of, right, we're past peak woke, where I think people are seeing through this stuff. However, I don't think they're ready to go to that extra level where they realize that part of the collectivist game is to put us in groups and make us feel like our suffering is greater than everybody else's suffering. And of course, with black people, it's really easy to do that because they suffered in America one of the greatest injustices in American history as a class, as a group, not specifically as the individuals who are living today. But that's the game they're playing. And people aren't ready to move past that. You get what I'm saying? So ultimately, see this movie for yourself. I think I'm going to give this a solid middle of the row, bro ranking. But here's the other thing, William. There haven't been a lot of good movies yet this year. I talked about it last week. So I'm hoping Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is
the first Dune
really
2 you refuse to see. The only good movie you
I hate the director, dude. Every movie I've seen by Villeneuve is boring as shit. I fall asleep. I think he's pretentious. Dude, Blade Runner 2049
was
terrible. Fucking boring.
I agree. I agree with you.
All right, you want to argue and yell about movies that aren't out yet?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. I have the trailers in Discord. You can watch them when you want, before the episode, after the episode, or alternate. Watch a trailer, we talk about it. Watch a trailer, we talk about it.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
The Crow stars Bill Skarsgård in the remake of the role Brandon Lee originated and died for. Right? And a lot of people don't talk about that tragedy anymore. Right? The irony of playing a guy who can't be killed, but then you're killed while shooting that movie. That's just insane. How did that movie ever get released, by the way, if you think about that? Like nowadays?
Well, I think the mother, right? Because the father died mysteriously too, right? So I think the mother came out and sort of said yes, that she would, you know, he would want this movie to come out.
Did you say the father died? Isn't Brandon Lee's father Bruce Lee?
Yeah. So the father died. And so
he said the father, he's some unknown, like Bruce Lee, one of the most iconic figures from the 1900s. He's just the father, right? Anyway, the plot of this movie is this guy falls deeply in love, and then the woman is unjustly killed, it seems like. I don't know. It's very interesting. And then he dies, but because there's injustice in the world, he is brought back to life by a crow, and he goes forward to kill all these people. Now, this is where I think we're going to argue, William. We're going to argue two things. You threw in the trailer takedown section of our outline here, you threw the old trailer in, and you said you want to contrast it. I'm going to say two things here. One, I think visually, this movie looks a lot fucking better than the original Crow movie. And I'm going to say this, I never saw the original Crow movie because it weirded me out. And when I watch this and I see stuff like the way people think emo is nowadays and pop punk and what goth was in the 90s, I think there's a lot that got confused due to the iconography of the Crow and the iconography of things like goth and what emo is now. I think even watching that original trailer, it looks like a bad version of any 80s martial arts movie or the Highlander series. I would rather watch the Highlander series over and over again than that original trailer. So I think the trailer, beat for beat, looks better than the original trailer. However, I think that this movie nowadays is irrelevant because Deadpool exists. Explain to me how this is any different from Deadpool, except it's more negative, whereas Deadpool is a comedy. In my sense of life, I would rather watch a Deadpool movie. So if there's nothing else in theaters, I would watch this because Bill Skarsgård is good. And like I said, it's enough like Deadpool. And I think it production value looks decent. Looks good even. However, it's not something that I would rush out to see or prefer to see. So I would give this a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
Yeah, I wanted to contrast it with the original Crow trailer, and here's why. I'm glad you brought up that it looks like Highlander, that it looks like a kung fu movie trailer from the 80s, right?
But a not as good one.
Right. I think they give too much away in this the Crow 2024 trailer. They give way too much away.
I did see a YouTube comment say, I guess they saved us buying the movie ticket because they showed the whole movie.
Yeah, exactly. Like, part of this is to figure out, like, in the original trailer, they have the little girl's voice tell you that a crow takes you, you know, carries your soul to the afterlife. But sometimes a soul doesn't want to let go. And so the crow lets them, you know, correct some injustice. Right. And that's it. And then you see some sort of iconography and that's it. Right. You don't they don't give away the entire plot of the movie and all the fight scenes and all the death scenes and that he's invincible. They give everything away in this. And Justin, I think that, of course, it's nostalgia lenses that a lot of people are watching, looking at this movie. The Crow is not a very good movie, the original one, but it did do something kind of interesting. It was kind of like, you know, it was kind of like Blade, right? It had a kind of a cult following. It has some good action sequences. It was visually interesting, but you're right. It's not a very good movie. So I don't mind necessarily that they're remaking this, but I'm a little worried. Like you said, sense of life wise, it's definitely not a movie that I'm really into. It looks like one of the good things about it was that it was mostly practical effects, right? And it was done fairly well. I'm a little worried in today's cartoon special effects that it's just going to be all cartoon special effects. I mean, that's how he died, was from practical effects accident. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I would feel about this. I am skeptical that in today's culture they can do a good job with it. But it's definitely one of those movies that if it's remade well, it could be better than the original, right? We've seen this with some movies, right? Ocean's 11 was better than the original Ocean's 11, right? So
I think it will be hard for it not to be better than the original.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if that is true, but we'll see. So I'm going to also Netflix and hug it.
Netflix and hug. Second trailer.
Atlas is a Netflix science fiction movie starring Jennifer Lopez, where I'm going to be honest, I watched this trailer a couple hours ago and I can't really remember what the point is beyond the fact that I was like, hey, this looks like, you know, decent enough science fiction. And I think like she gets trapped on her own and has to like survive. But here's the deal. My wife likes Jennifer Lopez. This is on Netflix. To me, it's science fiction. The production value looks decent enough. To me, this is the definition of a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
I think this one contrasts nicely with the other one. This gives away nothing, right? This just shows you a taste of the inciting incident, I'm presuming, and just enough to intrigue you, right? So it looks interesting. I'm gonna see it. It's got some sci-fi. So yeah, this is a hug for me.
Hug. Third trailer.
The Greatest Hits is also a sci-fi movie, and William, the Atlas, the Greatest Hits, and the last movie, they're all sci-fi. So I'm interested to see how you react to them. But this movie involves time travel. So should you just hit hug already for me, William, because it has time travel?
Hug.
Okay. Now, what is the particular mechanism here? I actually really, really like the setup of this movie. The idea that the music that she listens to causes her to travel back in time. And her boyfriend / husband, it's unclear if they were married or not, died in a car accident. And she's trying to decide if she wants to use time travel to save him or not, especially when she meets a new person and is starting to fall in love, but then she feels like she's cheating with the person. Now, does this trailer give away a little too much? Probably, to get ahead of what William is probably going to say, because now I know what he's looking for in most trailers. However,
I want to see the entire plot of the movie in a summary. I want to see the what is it, the Mojo Channel, whatever.
Well, I assume she's going to come to the terms of the fact that she shouldn't stop the past and just stop time traveling and then fall in love with the Asian guy and move on with her life. There we go. I've summarized the entire movie, okay? That's logically where it has to end. But I think it'll be a good journey, and it's a good way, I think, to concretize the idea of the bargaining that happens in the grief process that she's not willing to accept and move on. And it also melds perfectly with how music always brings us back. And that's one of the weird things I'm having nowadays. You know, I mentioned earlier with the last week, you know, I mentioned it briefly at the beginning of this show with Echo dying. You know, with both Echo and River being gone now, I don't really have a connection besides abstract thoughts, feelings, and memories about my time in Clemson. And it's very, very strange in that way, because music is the same way. Where think about like pop punk and the albums. Like, I think about Newfound Glory's self-titled album. And to me, that's always associated with, on a certain level, because it mainly helped me nap during the day when I was in undergrad at Ithaca College. Yeah.
Catalyst for me is moving to Baltimore and start my career.
Yeah. So and not without album. A fight. Not Without a Fight is when I found the Cats. And honestly, whenever I was driving with them, if I put that album on, it calmed them down because it was when they were young and it became part of their psychology. So songs do take us back. So I don't know. I think this movie, especially because the production value looks good, I think that this can be a movie where it shows a movie doesn't have to be twisty and tricky and over the top to be good. I think this can just be a good, enjoyable movie. It might be a tearjerker, but I think it'll be really enjoyable. Hug.
Hug.
My only thing about this movie is, is there ever been, how many women do you know that collect records? That's the only thing that threw me off. I was like, well, I've been to lots of record stores and I've never seen a woman in one. Now, I'm sure there are some, but it just threw me off a little. So it made me wonder afterwards.
So there's two things about that. One, this is the try not to set a movie in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Challenge, right? Like, this is a very Brooklyn, LA hipster mentality.
Yeah.
I agree
yeah.
with you that way. But two, if you found out records could help you travel through time, wouldn't you then collect them?
I would start collecting them. That's okay. True. That's true. I do have a few records. I have a very small, modest collection of records. I probably have like a dozen. But that threw me off a little. And I wonder, they're kind of going a bit. It's sort of like sci-fi romance in the trailer, right? It seems like I don't know. If it was a dude as the main character, I think it would be more, it would swing me more towards the sci-fi side. I don't know.
We've had this conversation before. Like, I'm having deja vu right now that you've said that exact thing before. And I mean, I think you're right. Like, this will even bleed into the next trailer. There was one thing I had trouble with, and it's because we're intentionally trying to put women and minorities in the protagonist roles.
Yeah, it's weird to say, right? But like, it to me, this story makes more sense if it was a guy, right? At least from the trailer. Maybe it makes sense in the movie, right? And maybe it's good, but I feel like it would be more impactful. Is that weird to say? Like, it just seems like something more of a guy's behavior, right?
I'd have to watch the trailer to see how, I'd have to watch the movie to see how they frame it in that way. I get where you're coming from, but I didn't see anything in particular.
Yeah. It's not a knock. Again, it's not a knock. I don't know what the content of the movie is, right? But it seems like I'll have to watch the movie. So I guess it's a hug, but like I'm curious. It's like, hey, this would have made more sense, at least based on the trailer, for it to be a male main character and this whole thing happening. But maybe it makes sense in the movie. But yeah, this does look interesting. It's kind of borderline for me. I'm not really into all like the romance stuff, like a romance style movie in general, right? But with the sci-fi elements, it does look interesting. So that's a definition of
Netflix and hug. Final trailer.
Breathe stars Jennifer Hudson and Mila Jovovich. In a world where Earth's atmosphere has become unbreathable, Jennifer Hudson husband five times fast. The spouse of Jennifer Hudson, her male spouse, invents an O2 machine or something and then dies. And then this is where, okay, William, what you were talking about in the last trailer comes back and bites me. I actively, when I was watching this trailer, was like, am I racist? Because here's the thing. Mila Jovovich is like, we need that machine. It can change the world. And Jennifer Hudson and her daughter are like, no, but like nothing about Mila Jovovich's performance is like a villain. Maybe I just watched too many of the Resident Evil movies, but I was like, just give her the machine. Why are we not giving her the machine? And then I was like, wait, shouldn't Mila Jovovich have just played the protagonist? And then I would have had more sympathy for the protagonist. And then I was like, wait, am I racist?
I think they did. I agree with you. They did not set up the conflict well, other than they're going to take it. But they didn't even, it's not even really explained, right? And yeah, I don't know.
It's just like, yeah, you shouldn't take someone's personal property, but I don't feel Mila Jovovich as a villain in this, and I'm supposed to. Now, that said, the production value looks great here. It's sci-fi. I like the world. I like Mila Jovovich. I like the concept of trying to survive in a post-apocalyptic world. I would see this. Hug.
Yeah, this one threw me off right at the beginning when they said, you know, the atmosphere doesn't have as much oxygen anymore, and he goes aside and says, atmosphere, 20% oxygen. Justin, the atmosphere has 20% oxygen. That's what it is. I'm sure they meant that it was 20% in his tank, but
yeah, that's how I took it.
Immediately threw me off when the first thing was like, yeah, we don't have a lot of oxygen outside. He looks down and says 20% oxygen. I was like,
let's make an inference now. Let's make an inference now. Okay.
All right.
Perhaps he was testing his O2 device that they were talking about. That's what that scene was.
Yeah. Maybe.
That explains what you're saying, right? He was able to try and change the atmosphere around him.
Yeah.
So the reason it said atmosphere 20% oxygen.
I think it was his tank, though. I think it meant he had 20% oxygen remaining in his tank. I think that's what it is. But it makes sense later.
I'm willing to believe that there are a few scenes of him, and they needed to use a scene of him in the trailer because he dies early, but they wanted to set the premise up, so that was him testing his machine. I'm making that prediction now.
Okay, all right. But it did throw me off. I was just as confused as you on this, on Mila's motivation. In the trailer, Justin, if they had made it just more mysterious and, like, have this person sneaking around and then didn't show anything else and then showed them fighting, I think that would draw you in as to, well, why is she here, right? But instead, they give her that line about, like, well, I'm just here to do, I don't know, just learn how your dad did this or something, right? Or whatever, right?
Right.
Because
she's not even like, I'm going to steal it and use it for myself. She's like, we need to learn how that works.
Yeah, it just throws you off, I think.
And her performance isn't menacing, right?
Her performance is not menacing. The suit doesn't help, right? I know it's, I mean, for the delivery of that line, right?
Yes.
It doesn't help for the delivery of that line. This looks interesting, but I'm very skeptical of it. You know, I want sci-fi that's new and interesting. So this is one that I'm going to watch. But it's another Netflix and Hug.
Netflix and Hug.
I like the sci-fi. Less crappy movies on this trailer takedown.
Yes. However, I think we're seeing that a lot of sci-fi nowadays is made for TV sci-fi or made for Netflix sci-fi.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. I will, despite Dune 2 being good, I still think if you can get past the effects of the sci-fi series Dune from the 2000s, that is a better adaptation.
All right. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that we're all terrorists now, but I think I already knew that. Justin, what'd you learn this trip?
I learned that I'm even more confused about what racism is and if I am racist or not, because I feel not racist for enjoying the Magical Society or the American Society of Magical Negroes. However, I feel racist because of my reaction to the trailer for the movie Breathe. So I really don't know what racism is and if I'm racist or not. All right, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. If it wasn't for you, I would just be a crazy person talking in the corner of my closet. I still am that. You just make me feel a little bit better. You can support the show by going to midside.com/store, picking up some merch, midside.com/cut, pick up my novel. You can also go to midside.com/Patreon or midside.com/locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. That is, of course, how we keep the lights on. And, of course, the best way to grow the show is to tell a female friend. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
100%.
I don't think we'll ever get to retire the Fauci, follow the science. Maybe that's the that's going to be the big cultural takeaway from the post-woke era.